Introvert Entrepreneur Podcast. I'm Beth Belo, and I'm glad you're joining me for this episode featuring a conversation with leadership expert Jim Hessler. We talk about introverts as leaders, how suffering can motivate a career change, and why introverts might have an edge when it comes to sales. And in case you're new to the podcast, I should let you know that The Introvert Entrepreneur, in addition to being a podcast, is a personal and professional development company. We offer life and entrepreneur coaching for introverts who want to amplify their strengths, as well as extroverts who could use a dose of calm, cool, collected introvert energy. You can learn more on my website at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. Let's get to the conversation. I'm talking today with Jim Hessler, founder of Path Forward Leadership Development and the co-host of the popular podcast, The Boss Show. Jim has spent the last 11 years as a leadership educator and facilitator after a long career as a business manager, specializing in turning around underperforming business operations. Jim is also the co-author of the book, Land on Your Feet, Not on Your Face. As co-host of The Boss Show, the podcast for anyone who is or has a boss, Jim and co-host Steve Motenko take serious and not so serious looks at topics such as workplace bullying, sexual harassment, the challenges of becoming a new boss, and the role of employee socializing in creating a productive workplace. The Boss Show is available by going to www.thebossshow.com. Hi, Jim. Thank you for joining me on the podcast. I'm really excited to talk about introverts and leadership, which I think is a new topic for us on the podcast. So thank you.
It's wonderful to be here. Thank you.
Well, I want to hear a little bit about your background, specifically how you came to know you were an introvert, because I've met you and you're kind of one of those types like me where people might not necessarily see that on the surface that you're an introvert.
Yeah, well, it's a great question because Not only I think sometimes we deceive other people in terms of our introversion, but we can also deceive ourselves. And I think there was a big part of that. I did not really discover in any definitive way that I was an introvert until my early 40s, late 30s, early 40s. Somewhere along there, I took a Myers-Briggs, which is probably how, you know, a number of people kind of get comfortable with the words introvert and extrovert and what they mean. But I think, you know, I've always been an introvert. I've always, you know, had the kind of characteristics of an introvert, but I never really put a name to it and really understood it until I did some, some testing, some assessments, Myers-Briggs and some other things that I did that really pointed this out. And it was really a big life-changing event for me. It explained a lot and explained a lot of things that I think I'd been struggling with and felt guilty about. And this gave a really helpful context to that and helped me to stop kind of blaming myself for not being the person I wanted to be in some ways and instead, you know, treasuring what I was instead of what I wasn't. So it really came about through personality testing that I discovered it.
What would you say the biggest shift that happened for you once you had that information?
Well, I'd say the biggest shift probably initially really had to do with my marriage and feelings that I really have been struggling not only in my married relationship but in my relationship with my children. And not really having a good balance there and not understanding as an introvert that I needed to have time by myself and my own self-judgment as well as maybe my judgment, some judgment coming from my wife about, you know, why is it that you don't want to be with us more? Why do you feel you need to kind of go off on your own and do your thing? Is that a problem? Is it somehow that you don't want to be with us? And so I think the first thing that was very helpful about the recognition of being an introvert was how it improved the quality of my married relationship and my relationship with my children, because now we could all discuss this and understand that, you know, hey, daddy just needs some time by himself. It doesn't mean he doesn't love you. He just needs this to be healthy, and let's, you know, build that time and that space for him into our lives and we'll all be better for it. So yeah, it had a big impact on my personal life that way. And of course, you know, from a business perspective too, you begin to understand the flow of your energy and how to balance it more effectively. And so I actually began to build the time that I needed into my professional life as well, and to talk to my colleagues and my employees about this and just say, hey, this is what I need in order to be whole and healthy. And that's just the way I roll. It's the way I operate. And for you to see me at my best, you know, we kind of need to have a partnership about this.
Yeah, it's so important. It's like after you had that awareness, you then had the language to talk about it. And it was probably more
exactly.
objective rather than something that's like, oh, I should be this or I should be that.
Well, right, because like so many other elements of self-awareness, you know, you move from judgment into understanding, I guess would might be one way to say it, you know, because I think one of the reasons I didn't recognize that I was an introvert for a long time is because I've never been shy. I mean, you mentioned that at the beginning. I've never been a shy person. And I think probably like a lot of people, I associated introversion with shyness. And I know in some cases that is a legitimate, you know, kind of cause effect thing. But so many people I know that are introverts are anything but shy. You know, some of them are performers and actors and things like that, you know, radio personalities. And so it has nothing to do with shyness, which really, that was important for me to understand too. And try, you know, a person like me who, you know, I was in an executive position at the time, managing 150 people, had to give a lot of public presentations, a lot of sales pitches. You know, you go to people you've been working with and say, hey, you know, I'm an introvert. And they're like, well, yeah. Sure you are. But then you start explaining it just as the, you know, the classic explanation of where do you get your energy. And then it begins to make sense to people. And so it was so good for me to put a name to this, to begin to explore it. And it just it made sense of so many parts of my life, even as a child. And I think that, you know, as I've kind of reflected on it, I think probably the biggest thing that shifted for me professionally and personally was removing guilt. I think as an introvert, I always had felt guilty about not wanting to be with people more. And so now I just didn't really have to feel guilty about that anymore. It was wonderful.
Well, I want to follow up on what you were talking about with your leadership position, you know, your career in sales. And how do you think being an introvert helped you in that role that was very public and very demanding? And how did it perhaps hinder?
Well, I think being an introvert, first of all, I really like people, so that's never been an issue. I'm not this, you know, kind of miscreant that, you know, wants to live off in the woods. I really do enjoy people, just, you know, kind of on a budget. So it never affected me in a way that I was, you know, perceived as being negative or, you know, aloof or anything like that. But what I think, particularly in my sales career, I think it was a really interesting challenge because I remember I went into sales and I went around and asked salespeople, you know, what makes you successful? You know, what does it take to be successful in this industry? Because I'd never had an outside sales, you know, commissioned position until I was in my, I'd say, mid-30s, early 30s. And it was interesting. Now, you know, all these guys said, well, you got to make a lot of calls. You got to be out there. You got to be, you know, make 12 calls a day, I think one guy told me. I thought, really? You know, and I ended up carving out a really successful career as a salesperson, making 3 to 5 sales calls a day. This was in the paper industry. We just, you know, we sold paper to printers. And the reason that I was, and in making 3 or 4 or 5 sales calls a day, I was actually passing up a lot of people that were, you know, on the surface, a lot more active than I was. You know, they were out with their customers a lot more. But what I found is that I was just very strategic about my conversations. I didn't just show up just to talk to people. I always had a purpose behind all my sales calls. I did research before I called. I made sure that when I went in and talked to my customers that I was talking with substance about something that mattered to them. So I think that that actually was helpful, because I don't necessarily enjoy the chit chat and the long conversations about the football game or the fishing trip. That I actually was a very kind of efficient salesperson. I went in and I was nice and courteous and friendly. But I generally got down to business pretty quickly, and I didn't waste my customers' time trying to be their buddies. I was solving problems for them. So I think, in a sense, it helped me, because I just had kind of an efficiency around my conversations with my customers that I think was actually effective. But of course, there's that hard part about it when you're driving around in your car, and you know that you have to make a couple more sales calls, and you kind of don't really want to. You've used up your budget for the day, and you think, God, I could just really go to a coffee shop right now and, read a couple of back editions of, Atlantic Magazine or something. Instead, I have to go talk to these people. And sometimes that was a real struggle. Sometimes that was really difficult to to turn the key in the ignition and drive into the parking lot, walk into the place of business. And when I had extended beyond that budget of tolerance for human interaction in that particular day, sometimes I did really have to force myself to go in and have the conversations that I needed to have to kind of just fulfill the budget, the business requirement of that particular day. So and of course the other thing is, moving beyond kind of my sales career, which actually was a fairly short part of my career. It was a very successful part, but it wasn't all that long. Moving into the management piece, I think the big advantage to being an introvert, well, there's several, but I'd say the number one that comes to my mind is I take the time to think. And so I've always tended to be kind of ahead of people strategically and ahead of people in terms of thinking out over the horizon into the future, because I take the time to do it. Whether it's just walking or eating lunch by myself or whatever I do when I'm alone, there's a thought process that's going on there that I think it's difficult when you're constantly engaging with people. So I think from an intellectual and strategic perspective, being an introvert has been helpful to me in significant ways. I think introverts also tend to be pretty good listeners. When we're in conversation with other people, we tend to I think our tendency is to learn more about them than they learn about us. It's kind of our way of protecting ourselves. And that's very helpful. When you're managing people and you're in a sales position or an executive position, I think it's really, really important to be a student of people, not just collectively, but also as individuals. And I think being an introvert, I think you get good at that. At least you can. You're not oriented towards just engaging for the sake of engaging, but you tend to have a real purpose in mind when you interact with another human being.
What I really appreciate is that you just gave us a really beautiful reframe a few minutes ago around when you were talking about the efficiency piece, mm-hmm. and not liking small talk. So many introverts, myself included, we say, I don't like small talk. It's not my thing. It drives me crazy. Yet we don't necessarily, we think, oh, I just have to endure it. But you just, shared that you can be pleasant and friendly and inviting and efficient. And efficiency is something that I think, whether you're a salesperson or an entrepreneur or, whatever role you have, is something that busy professionals appreciate. And so why not acknowledge that and see that as a strength?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And that's not to say that, certain customers, I think this is changing, but I think, kind of in the old days, I think a certain amount of social interaction was almost the price you paid for the relationship with the customer. So that's not to say there aren't customers that didn't really want to be friends and chat. It was kind of a welcome diversion for them. You know, hey, here's, you know, the salesman from, you know, company X, and he's a buddy, and good, I'm going to tease him about the fact that, you know, my team won the football game and his lost. And, you know, I think there was a certain type of customer for whom that sort of interaction was a really significant part of the buying and selling relationship. I tended to not do well with those types of customers, and I tended to do better with the types of customers who had a lot to do and didn't appreciate a salesperson coming in. Because I think salespeople who are extroverts often overvalue the friendship component of the sales relationship. They think, oh boy, I'm really getting in good with this guy or this woman. They really like me, and they make an inference that liking piece is going to lead to business, and it really doesn't. I find that people buy from people who solve problems for them and help them run their businesses successfully, and you know, being a nice guy, or being perceived as a friendly, nice guy isn't really where it's at, and especially not in today's circumstances when people all have way too much to do.
So it sounds like you picked up a lot of things that taught you about leadership and management. So what led you to make the transition into leadership development work?
Well, you know, people have asked me that question a number of times. I think, you know, obviously the opportunity to work for and to a certain degree by myself was an attraction there. But there was really a big values issue in getting into the leadership development field. And I've always described it as suffering. And what I mean by that is the number of people who go to work every day in this country and work for ineffective bosses, it creates an unbelievable amount of suffering in the world. And so working in the leadership development field has been in some significant way my small contribution to reducing the amount of suffering that people experience at work. Not just the employees, but the bosses as well, because when you're not leading well, you're suffering too. So I just, you know, I did a lot of turnaround work in my career. You know, they would call me and say, can you go fix Chicago or can you go fix Sacramento? And I was kind of a corporate gypsy and moved around quite a bit. And I just saw, you know, so I had this kind of before and after experience of going into a business and seeing it when it was really in deep trouble and then having the satisfaction two or three years later of seeing that the culture had really been changed. And what I always felt I was doing in those circumstances is alleviating suffering and making people's lives better. And so that really drove me into the leadership development field, because I realized how few people were really leading effectively, and the fact that very few of them had been adequately mentored or trained or developed to be the kind of leaders that other people respond to. So it was like both a mission and a calling from a values perspective, but also a work style of being able to work from home and spend a lot of time working by myself, which was also attractive.
You know, one of the things that we want to dig in a little bit deeper on here is introverts and leadership. And there's been a lot of, there have been some new studies in the past few years, and certainly introversion has gotten a lot more buzz lately. So in your experience in working with leaders and as an introverted leader yourself, what strengths do you see that they bring to their role?
Well, I think, first of all, I think that they don't spend a lot of their time in a kind of inconsequential or insubstantial activities. I think introverts, I think, tend to be, fairly serious people, I guess, would be one way of classifying it, and people that aren't distracted, I guess, from the task at hand by, you know, kind of a lot of social goings-on. So I think there's maybe kind of a focus that's helpful, that has been helpful to me. Like I said, the think time, in doing this leadership development work I've been doing for the past 11 or 12 years, I'm astonished at how little time leaders get to think and reflect on what's going on in their business. They come to work and they just start doing stuff. I think introverts are less likely to do that. I think they're more likely to kind of to be reflective about what's going on rather than just to get busy as a kind of way to feel useful or distract themselves. So I think there's certainly an intellectual component of learning and I mentioned it earlier. I think it's conceivable to me that an introvert would, by their nature, maybe be a little bit more of a strategic minded person because of that. I also think there is a tendency for introverted leaders to really drive to depth in their relationships. That may seem counterintuitive to a lot of people, but I think what introverts tend to want to have is a group of close-knit leaders that they're very close to. They're very connected to. We tend to not like superficial, inconsequential relationships. So I think with the people that we work most closely with, I think we drive to a level of depth and understanding in those relationships that can be really, really helpful in mobilizing a team and moving it forward. Empathy, the ability to create depth in relationships and the ability to reflect and think deeply, I would say would be the biggest advantages.
Let's say I'm an introvert who's maybe in middle management, or whether that's in a for-profit or a nonprofit or even a volunteer role. But I have some aspirations. Like I see that I could alleviate suffering by being one of those positive leaders. What kinds of tips would you have for an introvert who aspires to be in that kind of leadership role?
Well, I think you really have to think very, very critically about what kind of jobs you'd be willing to take and which kinds of jobs you'd not be willing to take. I mean, I think that there's – I think you have to look at the culture of the business that you're in or that you would aspire to work for and really ask yourself whether that culture and that organization is going to give you kind of the space you need to be the introvert that you are. So I think I think being very selective about the positions you take and whether that's going to be a good fit for you stylistically as an introvert. But I also think just really making sure that everybody who works with you understands that part of you and so you don't create any misunderstandings. I mean, certainly it's easy for an introvert to be perceived as arrogant or aloof. And so I think it's really, really important for introverts, because we are, somewhat of a minority in the world, is to sit down with the people we work with and say, hey, I'm an introvert. This is what that means. This is how you're going to tend to see me operate. And here's how that could, my activities or behaviors could easily be misunderstood. And so I want to make sure those are not misunderstood, and so help me manage this introversion. Help me get the time I need. Don't be upset if I don't want to go to lunch with you, for example. I mean, that's actually been kind of a big issue over the years is, people would come by my office and say, hey, let's go to lunch. And I would say, no thanks. And then they would see me later, at a restaurant sitting by myself, and they would think, oh God, he just didn't want to go to lunch with me. Well, no, that wasn't it. I needed 45 minutes of time to myself. So just really being open about it. This is who I am. This is how I operate. This is how we can work together to make sure that that's not a deficit or that you don't misinterpret my actions. Very easy for extroverts, I think, to misinterpret introverts. And so I think just communicating about that is really critical.
We have to remember that people can't read our minds.
Yeah, they can't read our minds, and things that socially are typically associated with being friendly and nice and open are sometimes hard for introverts, and so it's easy for people to form judgments about us, you know, based on that. And if they understand, if we, you know, share with them that journey of kind of understanding and managing that, I think, you know, most people are nice enough and understanding enough to support that.
And I'm also thinking about, you know, what you were saying about guilt around choices. And I think about how society sometimes brings that on. And I'm thinking of that book when you were talking about eating lunch alone. There's that, you know, Never Eat Alone book. And I've always been sort of tempted to get that book. But then I'm sort of like, yeah, but sometimes eating alone is the only time you might have.
I haven't read the book, but it certainly doesn't sound like a book for introverts.
No, it doesn't. I know. I'm like, you know, I kind of like eating alone.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because my father passed away recently, but he was a pretty successful business person for years too. And we kind of would sit and compare notes. And I said, well, you know, one of the weird things is I always like to eat lunch by myself. And he said, he just lit up and said, I did too. And nobody got it. Nobody. I mean, this was back in the 50s and 60s. You know, he'd run off and have lunch by himself. So I think he was a little bit of an introvert too. And so it was just interesting comparing notes and habits with him.
Yeah, and that reinforces again, like the more we talk about this, the more we realize, oh, it's not just me. That's something I hear so often. When people are willing to share.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been really pleased that the whole topic of introversion has kind of come out, you know, for a more public discussion. Because I think our, you know, one thing that concerns me, and maybe this is the introvert talking, is with so much opportunity now to interact with other human beings, through, you know, technology. I worry about people not getting enough time to think about what they're doing. I've kind of always been worried about this anyway, but I think technology is making it even more difficult. I mean, how often now do you see a young person, even taking a walk without some sort of electronic device in their ear, or literally walking? I see people walking through my neighborhood, you know, texting while they're walking, and you know, they're not noticing the flowers, they're not noticing the color of the houses that they're walking by, they're not, you know, soaking in kind of the ambiance of their neighborhood, and they're not really paying attention. And as an introvert, you know, my tendency is to pay attention to, I think being in the moment might be a little bit easier for an introvert in some ways, to really be an observer of the world around you and what's really going on here. And when we have all that stuff stuck to our ear and we're constantly being stimulated from a social perspective, then I think even those people that are extroverted in nature, you know, lose an opportunity to think and observe.
I think about how, and I'm guessing you might feel the same way, I feel so fortunate to grow up when I did, before everyone had a cell phone. There was no such thing as an iPod. There was no internet. You had to go to the library. You had to talk to somebody to get information. I feel so blessed, really.
I'm still trying to figure that out. You know, I'm 56 years old, so the age group I describe myself is I'm too old for this sort of technology to ever really become intuitive for me, but I'm too young to not care about it or disengage from it. And, you know, I think the jury's just still out, and I don't really have a judgment either way, whether this sort of rapid, you know, interactive technology is necessarily a good or bad thing. It's probably a combination of both. Because I think even for introverts, for example, I find email to be an extremely effective way to communicate. I think it, I don't know how you feel, but from,
oh, I love it.
I do. It's like writing letters, you know, and so I tend to really rely on email, and I'll sometimes express some pretty kind of long fairly complicated thoughts or concepts in an email, and then somebody will say, why didn't you just call me, you know? But for me, the idea of stopping and putting things, my thoughts down in writing seems to work better for me. I don't know if that's an introvert thing.
It is. Not. It is, actually. I think we often prefer writing email over the phone, definitely.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is because of what you just said. You have a chance to sit down, think about it, and kind of move at your own pace instead of feeling like you're kind of put on the spot and forcing, you know, the phone really forces you to think out loud.
It does. And I think also just, you know, looking forward to how would I prefer to communicate with this person, I'm not really all that motivated to get on the phone with them just from a social perspective. I'd rather make sure that our thoughts are communicated back and forth in the most kind of efficient and reasoned way. Although, you know, having said that, there's so many times when just getting on the phone with somebody is a better choice. And so I try to be selective about that as well. A lot of people would say I overdo email, and I guess I probably do sometimes, but it's still preferable.
Yes, yeah. Well, it's like it goes with that budget that you were talking about before and how you're going to spend your energy, and email requires a little bit less of an expenditure than the phone. And so.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Back to leaders for a moment, I'm curious about what you think about people who are leading introverts, like your experience with someone who has a team of introverts or has a few key players that are introverts. What kind of insights would you have for those kinds of situations?
You know, I would say that it just all comes down to not expecting the people who work with you to be the same as you and to have the same habits and motivations. I think we're real good at interpreting other people's behaviors and actions negatively when they're out of kind of our scope of understanding. So I think when you're a manager and you see somebody that is introverted, I think first of all, you need to be able to kind of know what an introvert is and how that operates. So I would say every manager should take the time to understand what introversion is and what it isn't. I mean, it's, you know, it's not a disease. It's not a condition. It's just a, you know, it's a set of personality traits. And in that sense, it's not that different from a lot of other personality traits that, you know, we talk about. Some people are more direct or less direct. Some people, are more conflict averse. You know, some people, prefer the chance to think about things. Some people would rather just hash them out in the hallway. I mean, different people have different styles. So I think a good manager who understands that people are different and tries to manage people as individuals is probably going to have a pretty good outcome in terms of managing introverts, because it's really just a matter of addressing them as an individual with a different set of personality behaviors and characteristics than the manager has. Having said that, I think if you have an entire team of introverts, you know, that's going to be problematic. I mean, we tend to see a lot of introverts. Again, you're probably more of an expert on this than I am, but we tend to see introverts, for example, in technical pursuits, software developers and things like that often tend to be introverts. It's probably one of the reasons they're good software developers. And so you all just have to think about the team dynamics. You just have to really think about how is having these introverts in my group affecting the way the group operates, because it might just require you to run your meetings a little differently, to maybe be thoughtful about how you ask introverts to engage with other people. You have to ask introverts, even if they're introverts, you have to ask them to make some accommodation for the extroverts in the group, just like you would ask the extroverts to make some accommodation for the introverts in the group. So I think as a team building exercise, you know, you do the same thing that you would do for yourself, which is to try to accommodate that diversity and play to the strengths of everybody. And so you just bring the team together and have them talk about it. Okay, Bob here, Bob's an introvert. How can we help Bob, you know, be a productive member of this team while also honoring, you know, his needs and his style? So it's not, you know, managing an introvert isn't so different from, you know, managing a, a young person versus an old person, or a man versus a woman, or whatever. It's just another aspect of the person's kind of unique characters and qualities that needs to be paid attention to. And any good manager takes the time to really understand all their people well. And introversion would just be one of the things you would want to understand about that person.
I think because of the conversation around introversion that's been brewing over the past, 6 months to a year, even introverts sometimes get a little sensitive about, well, people are given all of these rules and tips and guidelines for working with introverts. Well, we're not broken. We're not fragile.
Right.
We're not,
right.
You don't have to treat us special. So I appreciate what you're saying is, it's one trait of many that we all bring to the table, and that if we have an open conversation, then, we're probably going to also find, well, we make assumptions that it's an extroverted, it is an extroverted kind of culture here, at least in the United
yes.
States.
And
that translates into the business world and whatnot. So, but I think that can lead us to assume that extroverts don't have moments when they're not comfortable, or that they're not feeling welcome, or not able to participate as fully. It's not just the introverts. It can be on both sides of the table.
That's true. And, as an introvert, I've always had to understand that the deck probably is stacked a little bit in the favor of extroverts in terms of how social activity tends to be seen as a team building. Companies, for example, describe themselves as we're a family here, and what the kind of the underlying message is there as well. We do a lot of stuff together. We don't just work together. We go out after work, and we have picnics. So we're just a big family. And it's funny, as an introvert, whenever I hear that, it's like, oh crap, really? I already have a family, so we work together, we play together, that sort of thing. That's just a really extroverted thing to say, whereas the introvert says, well, I'd really like to do a really good job and come to work and have a good experience, and then I just want to go home.
Yeah, and so, both of us, we're always, both types and across the spectrum, no matter what the different characteristics we all bring to the table, it's what I'm hearing is it's all about awareness and openness and communication about it.
It absolutely is. And like I said, that applies to introversion and many other characteristics and qualities of a person's personality that deserve to be known and understood and worked with to the maximum degree possible.
Well, this has been really enlightening. I so appreciate your experience and perspective here. And I have one last question.
Fire away.
That I ask of all of my guests.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about Introvert Island, which a previous guest decided was in Fiji.
It sounds like a wonderful place.
Yeah, I really,
I
really
go there.
Want it to exist. I know. I want to go there for maybe more than a year.
Yeah.
But you have been granted a year's vacation on this wonderful Introvert Island, but you can only take three books with you. Three old-fashioned dead tree books.
Mm-hmm.
No Kindle. What would you take with you and why?
It's a great question. I'd sure like to take a lot of periodicals with me, so I don't know if I'd get a waiver for taking a big stack of magazines, because there's a whole bunch of magazines I read on a regular basis. But if it has to just be books and that's all, let's see here. It has to be stuff I haven't read yet, right? I don't think I want to take a book and reread it, although I could probably read Moby Dick about 12 times and enjoy it each time. And by the way, that's kind of an introvert book, really, I think. I think we could talk about that some other time. I've always heard that Remembrance of Things Past by Marcel Proust is like the greatest novel ever written. And it's long. So it would have the advantage of like, okay, now I've read Remembrance of Things Past by Marcel Proust, and it used up a lot of my time on Introvert Island. So that would probably be on the list. It's like a multi-volume novel. It's really huge. I've actually read one of the early parts of Remembrance of Things Past, and that was quite good. So I've always wanted to kind of go back and finish that. So that'd probably be on the list. I really like historical fiction. I'm kind of a big Michener guy. And now the guy that everybody reads is a guy named Edward Rutherford. He wrote a book about New York that I'm very interested in reading. It's a historical novel about New York City, which I love. My daughter lived there for a number of years. So that would be fun. And, I've never really felt that I've engaged as much with poetry as I'd like to. So probably a nice, big, thick anthology of American poetry would be a good thing, because these are things you could read over and over and over again and get into more depth and more understanding of the poetry as your time on the island was passing. So I guess those would be my three choices.
Well, thank you very much, Jim. I've really enjoyed the conversation. And
thank you, and I appreciate the work you're doing in helping create an understanding around this issue. It's important, and so kudos.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
After this conversation, I was looking up some leadership quotes and came across this one from management consultant Peter Drucker. Effective leadership is not about making speeches or being liked. Leadership is defined by results, not attributes. That idea, that effective leadership is more about results than charisma, seems perfectly paired with the insights Jim has shared with us today. Introverts can and do make speeches, and we absolutely enjoy being liked. After all, we're human. But we tend to take a look at the big picture alongside the bottom line in determining our success. If you want to hear more from Jim Hessler, be sure to visit his website and listen to The Boss Show. He's at www.thebossshow.com. You can also find him on Facebook at It's The Boss Show and on Twitter at The Boss Show. Thank you so much for listening today. And if you enjoy this podcast, I invite you to share it with your social media networks and consider leaving a review on iTunes or on the podcast webpage. If you would like to learn more about my coaching, speaking, and training services, you can find me online at www.theintrovertentrepreneur.com. You'll also find information on my website about my first book, Insight: Reflections on the Gifts of Being an Introvert, which is available through Amazon.com. Until we meet again, remember, success is an inside job.